Welcome to this podcast from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, exploring aspects of our life and witness at this time.
Hello and welcome to the PCI podcast. Thanks for joining us. My name is Pip Floreat and I am PCI's Mission Support Officer for Partnerships, which involves working in the Mission Department with partners both internationally and throughout Ireland. I am your host for today as we have a chat about something that's affecting many parts of the world, including here in Ireland. And around the world, about 110 million people have been forced to flee from their homes for many reasons, including conflict, natural disasters, climate change, land grabbing, religious persecution, and many more. And many of these people end up in other countries, including Ireland, while many others are displaced within their own countries. So today we're going to talk about some of the wider aspects of that, and particularly focus on this year's World Development Appeal, which is called Starting from Scratch. So I have two guests with me, both of whom travelled to Sierra Leone earlier this year to meet some people who've been affected by displacement. And I'll let them introduce themselves. Richard, would you like to start?
Yes, Pip, my name's Richard Kerr. I'm the Minister of Temple Patrick Presbyterian Church. And I'm also a convener of the Global Missions Global Development Committee. And it's particularly in that capacity that I'm here today, and in that capacity that I travelled to Sierra Leone.
Great. And Ruth?
Yes, hi, I'm Ruth Cook. I work for Christian Aid Ireland. I lead the fundraising and supporter engagement team. I've been with Christian Aid for about 4 years, actually December 2019, so this is my work anniversary this week.
Well, it's great to have you both here, and thanks for joining us. Let's start with a bit of the big picture. So Ruth, can you give us a bit of an idea of the global picture of displacement at the moment?
Yep, sure. So you already gave us one of the stats there in your intro. There's about 110 million people by the end of 2022 that had been forcibly displaced from their homes. So that could be through conflict, it could be through persecution, violence, human rights violations, it could be climate-related disasters, that type of thing. That's an increase of 19 million on the year before that, which is hard to believe. It was also the highest year for internally displaced people, that we would talk about IDPs, internally displaced people. About just over half of refugees and other displaced people come from three countries, which is interesting: Syria, Ukraine, and Afghanistan. But other countries that maybe have a lot of internally displaced people are countries like Democratic Republic of Congo, Colombia, Yemen, Somalia, Ethiopia. We haven't quite got the figures for, obviously we haven't finished 2023 yet, but we know that Sudan will feature heavily. Over 5 million people have moved either within or out of Sudan this year because of increased levels of conflict. And where do they go? Well, people often start travelling maybe internally in their own country to try and find a better situation or safety. And if that doesn't work, then they maybe go elsewhere. Countries all over the world are hosts of displaced people. For example, Iran hosts over 3 million people from Afghanistan. Bangladesh hosts over 1 million people from Myanmar. Poland has over 1 million Ukrainian refugees. So the burden is spread. There's countries everywhere that are hosts. But often it's countries that are neighbouring the country that people have left that people go to. And so if you're in an area where there's particular volatility, a region of the world with particular volatility, or maybe prone to weather-related disasters, there might be a greater burden even. And I know we'll get onto this later, but I think it's important to say that even with all those statistics, which is quite hard for us to get our heads around, all of those people are human beings with stories, with hopes, with a desire for something better, maybe for them and for their children who have maybe suffered greatly in their lives.
Thanks, yeah. And when these people flee their homes, do many of them return, or do they settle where they end up, or, you know, what happens to them?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I think it's probably not a straightforward answer. It depends, largely. So some crises, the reasons why people have left their home, that can go on for quite a long time, and so the idea of returning isn't really possible. So people can end up living in what effectively is temporary situation, but almost permanently So refugee camps, for example, people have been in the likes of Cox's Bazar in Bangladesh for maybe years and years. That's supposed to be temporary, people living in tents, etc., but it goes on for a long time, and so that can impact access to education, healthcare, economic opportunities, for example. And so the idea of settling, or that word settled, I don't know how much that really can apply in those situations. Sometimes there is resettlement even in a third country. So we've experienced that here, particularly through the likes of the scheme to resettle people from Ukraine in both Ireland and Northern Ireland. That can provide maybe a longer term solution and a sense of settlement for people who have left. Some people do return. It's not always for the best of reasons. So this year we've seen, so people in had left South Sudan originally, maybe gone to Sudan, and this year they're returning to South Sudan, but not because something really positive, but because they're leaving what has now become a worsening situation. And then, of course, sometimes people are forced to return to the country that they've come from for various reasons.
May I come in there, if you don't mind, Pip, just to say a couple of things? It's important to realise that people, by and large, do not choose, it is not their first choice, to leave their place of birth and when they've grown up. That is forced upon them by war, by famine, by other natural disasters, and sometimes by economic issues as well. So their choice, if they could, would be to stay where they live. We have hosted many people from Ukraine in Northern Ireland and Ireland as a whole over the last couple of years. And the vast majority of them would want to go back to where they came from if they could. But that may never be possible. But the other side of that is, as people come here and we get to know them and we build relations with them, they become not simply statistics. They're simply not this huge number of people who are displaced or are seeking refuge. But they become people on our doorstep, people we get to know personally, people we get to know by name, people who may come to our churches, people that we engage with because they're living in our community and indeed often doing jobs that we engage with them day by day wherever we are. So that human face, that personal interaction is so key in all of this as well.
Yeah. I guess that side of displacement is something that we might be a bit more familiar with because there are people that we've met and things that we see on our doorstep. But if we have a look at this year's World Development Appeal, it might be a story of displacement that we're perhaps a little bit less familiar with. So Richard, you travelled to Sierra Leone earlier this year. Can you tell us a bit about that and about the situation there?
Well, Ruth and myself and Chris, our filmmaker, travelled together to Sierra Leone in April, and our particular focus was to see what Christian Aid were doing with people who were displaced, particularly because of an oil palm plantation that had been established, taking up 45,000 acres of land, and had displaced quite a number of people. We travelled to Sierra Leone, to Freetown, the capital, then to Bo, the regional capital, and then out to where the village was that we were to film in and where we wanted to meet the people. And this has all been set up by Christian Aid Sierra Leone. They'd done a lot of homework, a lot of background work before we got there, but nothing prepared us for the welcome we received. It was, to say the least, dramatic. We had a meeting with the elders in the village and it became very, very clear very quickly that we were not welcome. And this was a story they did not want us to share with the wider world. And certainly with our church. So that became a real challenge for us, and was back to plan B, or maybe plan C by that stage. We had to basically retreat, take stock as to where we were, and then we approached a neighbouring community, a neighbouring village, a neighbouring chief, and we asked permission to meet with some of the women in his community who had been displaced from this particular community where the oil palm plantation had been established. And that actually worked exceptionally well. These are women, by and large, who had been pushed out of that area by the plantation. There had been very much a conniving of the village elders and chiefs, almost entirely men, with this multinational oil palm company to take land. There had been some compensation paid, but there were also many people who had missed out on that, or indeed where the compensation was totally inadequate for the amount of land that had been taken. And this was land that had been farmed by their families for generations. It was land that they needed for their livelihoods, good land, but they were pushed off that land and they were looking for alternatives. Some of them got work with the company for a time. Even that didn't work out well. And we heard one story of a lady, Martha, who fell sick, wasn't able to continue her work. And basically she lost her job without any compensation and became totally dependent on others in a neighbouring village. But the story, the person that comes to mind particularly is that of Hawa, who is the central figure and face of this year's World Development Appeal. We met Hawa in this neighbouring village. She was a woman, a young woman in her mid-20s with three children. She had lived in the area where the plantation had been established with her family. Her father was one of the leaders in the village as well, but he opposed giving the land to the plantation, but basically he was pushed out, and indeed, as a result of the stress, he died. Hawa's own husband, at that stage, he decided to leave to go and find work in a neighbouring town, and he hadn't been heard of at all for some time, in fact, for several years. So Hawa was left on her own with three children, but there was a real sense of resilience, of strength, of determination that she would make things happen. And also there was support from Christian Aid for a village loans and saving association. She wanted to be part of that. She saw that as an opportunity to better herself, better her family. And we spent some time with her. We filmed her going out into a couple of small fields which had been given to her by this village where she had come to live. And we filmed her as well meeting with other women in this village loan and savings association. And just her ingenuity, her enterprise, her determination was quite inspirational.
Great. And either of you then, can you tell us a bit more about what Christian Aid are doing in those villages and the work that they're doing? Maybe a bit more about that Village Savings and Loan Association and some of the other projects that are going on to help the people who have been displaced by the palm oil plantations?
Sure. We can probably both add to that. So one of the things is the sort of bigger picture advocacy around this company. Obviously, I mean, the company has signed a lease with the government, so in that sense, it's legitimate. But there has been pressure put on people, violence has broken out at times, and people weren't given, maybe there was survey done of how much land they had. In fact, Martha, I think she said she had maybe 30 acres, but the survey said she only had 5 or 10, and so the amount of money then that she got in compensation wasn't a fair amount. We work with a partner organisation called Green Scenery in Sierra Leone, which does advocacy work and education work and tries to lobby the government for change, really, on this kind of issue.
The Village Loan and Savings Association is particularly interesting. It's supported by Christian Aid, and it's one of their partners that has helped to make it happen. And essentially, it is a group of women who have what they call a box where they keep their money. It's their own investment, their own savings. They've gathered this money up by doing little agricultural enterprises or by selling goods or whatever and making a small profit. It has three locks, therefore three people hold the keys for security, and it stays in the chief's home. And then it's brought out and when they have their meetings, and they keep very meticulous records. In fact, the only man involved is a young man who keeps those records, because virtually all the women are illiterate. And so you'll see in the video that they sign their name with their thumbprints. But the key thing in all of this is that this is their money. They're putting their savings into this, and then they get loans from that box, which they then take to help them to buy goods, which they sell on and make a profit, or to develop agricultural enterprises, which also can make them money, which can then support their families. And clearly this has made a huge difference in their lives. And also, probably most significantly, it gives them a real pride in themselves and what they can do and what they can achieve for themselves. And this is not simply a handout. In fact, not at all a handout. This is about giving them the wherewithal to address the livelihoods lost by the plantation taking their land in the first place. And so that's particularly significant. And it's significant to see the way Christian Aid works in that context. And in terms of a broader picture of this and what how this fits together, you know, there's a saying that you give a man a fish and he's fed for a day. You teach a man to catch fish, you give him the wherewithal to look after himself for a lifetime. And indeed, in a very practical sense, we physically saw Hawa going out to a river basin to fish and just showed some of her enterprise in that as well. But there's another aspect to this, and that is that what Christian Aid are doing here is not only providing the fish, if you like, and aid and relief, which they have done very well, and we've seen that in Ukraine and other places where we've partnered with them, and that's why we partner with Christian Aid and Tear Fund, because they have such a good track record in this regard. And not only do they do the development work, that teaching people how to catch fish, which again we saw lots of evidence of that with the Village Savings and Loans Association, as well as in other ways. But maybe key, and particularly key in this particular World Development Appeal, is the next level, which is that of justice. That idea of addressing those barriers which prevent people from catching fish, actually making a real difference. So Green Scenery, as Ruth has highlighted, an agency that advocates for people, provides education as to their rights, their land rights, what they're entitled to in terms of compensation. They're an organization that represents them in court if that is necessary, an organization that also brings representation to government and have actually been instrumental in Sierra Leone in getting the government to change its land laws to protect people like Hawa and others. And it was really significant to see how Christian Aid Sierra Leone links in with strategic partners like that to make a real difference at a whole range of levels. In a sense, you could say holistic, and certainly when we talked to Joanna, the Christian Aid person on the ground who was dealing with this project, she talked very much about her Christian faith and how Jesus was her motivation for what she did and how she lived this out and worked this out day by day.
And for both of you, was there one thing in particular that you personally learned from the trip?
One thing.
Hard to narrow it down.
I was thinking there about Hawa, because we did spend most of our time, several days with her, learning about her life. And she was, as Richard has already said, really determined young person, a young lady. She saw the Village Savings and Loans Association in operation, and she really wanted to be a part of it. The box, as the women talked about, but she didn't have the money that she needed yet, which is the equivalent of about 40 pence. That's what she needed to join. And so she thought about, well, how can I get enough? How can I make this 40, the equivalent of 40 pence? And she saw that people were processing palm fruits for their own businesses, but there's part of it that they were discarding. So she went along behind and she picked up what they had discarded, and she processed it further to then make some income, which she was able to join the Savings and Loans Association. And I mean, her determination was amazing, but again, it struck me that, you know, Christian Aid and our partner organisations and PCI, we are not making Hawa be a determined person. We are not teaching her to work hard. She already has that in her. We are simply enabling that to flourish and to really come to be by giving her some of the tools that she doesn't have. But it's not that we need to change her in some way or make her work harder. And I think that's really important for all of us to remember, is that actually Hawa has that inside of her. That's the kind of person that she is. But it's sometimes it's the tools, maybe, or the something to get started that we can really help her with. So that was one thing. I mean, there's lots of others, but I'll let Richard talk too.
I think the thing that struck me most as I think about this and what I learnt on the ground, it is relatively easy to give charity or aid or to provide people with the basic things that they need, whether that's food, clothing, shelter. That is important, and there's a place for that. But it is not hugely costly, other than maybe to our pockets. It is incredibly important to support people in their development and in helping them to do things for themselves, to create those opportunities whereby they can stand on their own feet, they can do things for themselves, that because it gives them a real sense of belief in themselves, and I guess a real sense of purpose and value and worth. They are not just recipients of aid so they can get on and do things. For example, within the Village Loan and Savings Association, they can see how they can make a difference for themselves and for their families. And that is fantastic. But the thing that probably struck me most in all of this was that while those things are incredibly important, and I think we need to be involved in them and supporting of those things, when it comes to taking the next step of advocating for justice, that is much more costly. And I heard that particularly from Joseph, who is the guy who heads up Green Scenery, because he told us that he was often ridiculed and criticised, and there were even articles in newspapers criticising Green Scenery because they were advocating on behalf of farmers and women and people who had lost out from the plantation and elsewhere. And it was very, very clear that there was a real cost to him and indeed to others involved in challenging what was unjust on the ground. And often I think we are tempted, even as Christians, to take the easy way out. You know, it's relatively easy, and I'm not taking away from the importance of giving. I'm not taking away from the importance of supporting people in their own development and moving forward. But whenever we speak up for justice and speak out against injustice, that can be much more costly, and we're much more open to being criticised and misunderstood. And I think we saw that, you know, in a sense, in that initial encounter with the village when we were told, you're not welcome here. We don't want you here. We don't want this story shared, because they didn't want themselves to be presented in a bad light. So while the cost to us was minimal, although there was a potential at one stage we could be going back to Ireland where they had a film for the World Development Appeal, but at the same time, it struck us the cost that was ongoing for people like Joseph and for Hawa and others, but who are working to seek justice.
And leading on from that a bit, it can seem very far away, another world really, and something that we don't really have a lot of experience with here. But why should we get involved? Why should we care? And how can we get involved? How can PCI members here respond to these things?
I think part of it is about challenging the kind of pervading narrative that there is around people who move countries, refugees. We hear a lot of it at the minute, particularly in the news, don't we? And it's not much of it is really positive. And so maybe we can challenge, when we hear conversations, we can challenge what we hear and talk about, well, as Richard said, it's not that people often want to leave their homes and what they know and go somewhere strange and different with uncertainty. And how all those people who are moving around, they have stories, of course, and hopes and dreams for the future. And so maybe we can challenge that narrative. I think we can ask questions of our churches. What is it that we are doing? Because as we alluded to earlier, there are many people who have come to Northern Ireland and Ireland from other countries for a whole remit of reasons. A friend messaged me at the weekend and said, you know, pray for us today. We're hosting 150 refugees in church. We are doing a carol service and we're having a Middle Eastern meal with them. And I thought that was amazing, 150 people. And they had put a letter in the newsletter about it and how they wanted to be a part of a society that welcomes people, that says we have something we can learn from people from around the world. This can change us for good by opening our arms and being welcoming. And I think we were challenged on that when we were on our trip too. Whenever, you know, this village that we were in called Sorbe Grima, they were a relatively poor village, but yet they had really welcomed in women and families who had come because of the palm oil plantation. And they had carved up room and whether that was housing or and farmland as well to welcome people like Hawa. And that really challenged us. It's not like they had lots and lots and lots to spare, but they wanted to use what they had and share it. So that's, I think, part of it. And then engaging with organisations like Christian Aid that are working around the world, both on symptoms and on causes, you know, the kind of bigger picture stuff that Richard talked about. It might feel difficult as individuals to affect change at high levels, but bigger organisations can do that and can speak up. So I think there are lots of people that we will never meet around the world, but we can actually positively impact their lives through our giving and our prayers.
Richard, anything else to add to that about what you think PCI members can do, how they can respond?
I'm going to say a couple of things, but I'm going to start with a little bit of a big picture for us as Christians, and that is that justice should be part of what we are about, because God is a God of justice. And we who follow God and follow his son Jesus Christ should seek justice for others, not just for ourselves. And I think that's absolutely key. Isaiah 30 says, you know, God is a God of justice. We're told that God loves justice. And the God of the Old Testament, we see him bringing his people out of slavery in Egypt and then equipping them and teaching them and giving them the law, which commands them to provide justice for others. And there's so much put in place there in terms of the law in Leviticus that protects the vulnerable, whether that's the widow, the orphan, the displaced, but also provides the king's man redeemer, which we see in Ruth, and also that concept of jubilee, of putting things right, of giving people the opportunity to flourish. And of course, in Jesus, and at this Christmas time, you know, as we think of the narratives, particularly Mary's song, how God reverses things, turns things upside down, favors the poor, of Zechariah as well, about what God is doing, allowing a light to dawn, that idea of God's justice coming in through Jesus. And of course, Jesus himself in Luke 4 quotes Isaiah 61, you know, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me to bring good news to the poor, to release the captives. So, you know, very much at the heart of who we are as Christians, as followers of Christ, as followers of a God of justice, we want to seek justice for other people. Now, as I've said earlier, that is challenging. And give you just a little practical example of how we might think about that. The reality is, we talk about a palm oil plantation in Sierra Leone that is unjust and is disadvantaging people there, like Hawa. The reality is that every one of us every day, or at least virtually every one of us, virtually every day, use palm oil products, because it's almost impossible not to. I went into Tesco one day recently, and there are other supermarkets that we could name, and you know, I could not find a bar of soap that didn't have palm oil in it. So it is particularly challenging to think about how we might use palm oil products that are equitably sourced, that where we can be absolutely sure that there people are not exploited. That is not easy at all. But I do think it's important that we ask these questions about our habits of consuming things, whatever that may be, and how that might impact people in other parts of the world, whether that is palm oil or clothing potentially made in the sweatshops in other parts of the world. You know, do we think about these things? Do we think about where our food has come, the air miles involved? There's lots of things that we, as Christians, in terms of thinking about justice for others, can think about. And as I said, there will inevitably be a cost to us in that. But I think it's a cost that we must be prepared to pay.
So we've been talking a lot about the challenges and the injustice and the big picture of that. So just a question for both of you. Where is the hope in this crisis and this injustice? Where have you seen that hope?
Well, it's a great question, because for a lot of us, when we watch the news and we read the newspapers, we do feel overwhelmed by the scale of the problems in the world. It feels negative and scary and uncertain, and we can get a bit lost in that. And so we have to hold on to hope where we can find it. And so, well, one obvious thing is, you know, Hawa and the story that we, and her story that we were trying to tell through the World Development Appeal, and getting to understand her and her community and that community of Sorbe Grima, how they had welcomed others. And so things like that really give me hope. I was reading last week about some projects in Honduras that Christian Aid are involved in, and there's lots of reasons for it. There's climate change, there's issues of drug violence in the area. There's inequality between men and women and various things. But one of the factors is migration, poverty really forcing people to move. And so the project was around beekeeping, training people in beekeeping. And I thought it was so interesting to read about this, the huge impact in the community of a tiny bees, you know, small but mighty bees affecting change. Who would have thought that that would help people to be able to diversify their income, overcome poverty? That would mean that people would feel less inclined that they had to leave, and so they could build up the community that they're in. That is really, really hopeful to me as well. And then people who are supporters of Christian Aid, but also supporters of the World Development Appeal and more broadly, I feel so hopeful and humble, humbled by the people that I meet who are so generous to us. And more it amazes me that they are generous to people they will likely never, ever, ever meet. But they want to be a part of the solution rather than the problem. I met a woman, this is a few years back, I'll be brief, but she was a woman in her 60s. She was overwhelmed by the news and she kind of switched off the news. She thought, I can't cope with it anymore. But she also prayed a dangerous prayer and said, God, please break my heart for what breaks yours, which, you know, only pray it if you're prepared for that to be answered. And she was at a conference and she heard about a particular issue and she just broke down and wept and she felt that her heart was broken for this issue. And someone was praying for her and she wondered, but what can I do? What can I do? And the person who was praying said, Mary, just take the next step. Just take the next step. And so she went home, she did a bit of research, she found an organisation working on it and she signed up to give monthly. Mary, just do the next thing. And she would get invitations to speak at women's groups. And so she would use those opportunities to share about this issue. Mary, just do the next thing. And she filled a jar with little pieces of paper with prayer needs on it. And every day for a year, she took one out and she prayed for the issues and the organisations involved. Just do the next thing. And that gives me hope that ordinary people will take small steps in the everyday to affect change. And whether that is something that impacts their pocket, their wallet, whether it's changing their giving or their spending habits, whether it is welcoming a stranger in, that's all of those things are of God, I believe, you know, that we can do that in response to him and reflect who he is.
There's a real sense that this past year, there's been a lot of darkness in our world. We've seen wars in Ukraine, in Israel, Gaza, in so many parts of the world. And there's a danger that darkness seems to pervade and permeate our lives. And it certainly results in many, many people being displaced and a lot of heartache and pain and brokenness. And we see examples of people's greed and selfishness in so many ways as well. And yet, wasn't it always thus, even in the times of Jesus? You know, because the prophet Isaiah says, the people walking in darkness have seen a great light. You know, and it is the hope of Jesus Christ coming into the darkness. He doesn't avoid the darkness. In fact, he comes into the darkness to bring his light to bear, to change people's lives, to transform us from the inside out, to make a real difference, and to bring true justice into people's hearts and lives, addressing our sin and that which alienates us from God. So for me, that model of Jesus coming to be with us is right at the heart of what the season is about, of course, but it is what I hold on to in terms of hope. I was very privileged earlier this year to travel on behalf of the Global Mission Council to Lebanon. And there are many, many challenges there. There's so much going on, an economy in collapse. There are many, many refugees from Syria and Lebanon. It's the highest percentage of refugees in the world. There was a huge explosion in the port, a lot of infrastructure destroyed. There's been a brain drain as young people leave. There's been a huge devaluation of the currency. I could go on. There are many problems. You would say, in human terms, very dark. And yet we heard stories, repeated stories, of God at work changing lives, of people coming to faith in him and trusting him and following Jesus Christ, even in the darkness, even in the difficulties, even in the challenges. And that is the hope that I hold on to in all of this. And I think for us as God's people, it reminds us too that, and Ruth has picked this up, that in small ways we can connect with people where we are to do something that brings something of that good news, that hope of Jesus Christ, even into what may seem like dark places, challenging places, difficult places. And my challenge to people, myself, and to others this Christmas is to connect with people where we are, locally, or indeed through our giving to the World Development Appeal, indeed thinking about our own consumer lifestyles and how we can maybe address that and make a difference for justice in the world, but do that in Jesus' name. And I mentioned Joanna earlier from Christian Aid in Sierra Leone, because that was very much what she talked about, how Jesus motivated her to live a life that connected with people on the ground, people who'd been displaced, people disadvantaged, people discriminated against, but she wanted to turn that around in the name of Christ.
And I think that idea of hope is so relevant at this time of year as well, as we're looking forward to Christmas and looking forward to celebrating when Jesus came. One of my favourite lines from a Christmas song is from O Holy Night, where it says, "A thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices." And I always just think, you know, that idea of the weary world, it's something that we can all relate to so much. And, you know, as you say, every time you turn on the news, it's something else, and it just makes you feel really heavy and weary. But in that, you know, we have this thrill of hope, and that hope is in Jesus. So Christmas carols, what are your favourite Christmas carols?
I am going to go, I could probably do a few honourable mentions, but I'll just go for the favourite, which is O Come, O Come, Emmanuel. I think, well, it's a beautiful melody, but also that word, Emmanuel, God with us. I think Richard's already talked about it there. It's a really astounding concept, isn't it? That God decided to come near, to come close, to come into a broken and flawed world, a weary world motivated by love and with the purpose of redeeming us. And that, you know, there's a thrill of hope, isn't there, with that idea? And it gives us hope even as we think about these big issues of injustice as well, that God will redeem all things in time.
I'm going for joy to the world. The Lord has come. That concept of Jesus coming into the darkness, of transforming that which seems hopeless and difficult, and bringing hope and joy and light and life. Just absolutely wonderful.
Great. Well, thank you both so much, Ruth and Richard, for chatting to us today. And listeners, if you want to find out anything more about the World Development Appeal, just have a look at the PCI website or contact the Mission Department. And we would like to wish all of you a very Merry Christmas.
You've been listening to a podcast from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. Thanks for joining us.